You're listening to episode 17 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
David, you know, I've had an exciting week so far because my little quadcopter arrived the other day.
And I know you bought it from Amazon. Did it arrive by octocopter?
No, it came from a UPS truck. But I'll tell you, you know, my hopes that I might be a natural at piloting one of these things was dashed pretty quickly. But maybe we'll talk about that at the end of the show if we have a few minutes.
It's just unfortunate there's no video to go with those dashed hopes.
I thought about setting up a camera, but I'm kind of glad I didn't now because it would have been a kind of an embarrassing video. So, David, what are we looking at on the agenda for this episode?
Well, since we're talking about UAV deliveries this week, evidently they've been using drones to smuggle contraband into prisons in Georgia. We can talk about learning to fly unmanned vehicles at university, evidently a subject near and dear to your heart currently. Why do UAV privacy laws carve out ground drones? Not all drones fly.
That's right.
Humanitarian purposes, and we've talked about this one, about, you know, people are trying to be proactive and use their drones for humanitarian reasons, and the FAA seems to have problems with that. And then, of course, the big news of the week, Amazon.com and Prime Air and Mr. Bezos' vision for delivery systems. And last but not least, we turn to the dark side and drones hacking drones. Our first story is from our listener, Ben. Drones used to try to smuggle contraband into jail. This was from bbc.co.uk. Prison guards, among the most perceptive people, noticed a hexacopter over Calhoun State Prison in Georgia. Four people were arrested after the drone was found in a car with some tobacco and mobile phones and desirable items for the incarcerated. Usually people are breaking out of prisons. Flying drones into them is a new concept, huh, Max?
Well, I can understand the motivation for trying to sneak in some of this contraband because things like tobacco and mobile phones are very valuable inside prison walls. But I don't know, to fly a hexacopter over the wall to try to deliver these things, it kind of surprises me that someone would think that could go undetected. It is an interesting application, moving contraband to places where it oughtn't be. Maybe we'll see more creative, similar uses for drones as we in the future.
Creative is a good term. A hexacopter that's big enough to carry cell phones and contraband and tobacco is not one of those things that is easily missed, especially when prison guards are designed to be watching things and usually are on the walls watching the internal side. So having the thing go buzz by is sort of a unique delivery system. And unfortunately, it does add to our argument that drones are just tools and people will use them for good and use them for bad.
For sure. I wonder how they were navigating this drone. I wonder if they were doing first-person view or if they had this thing autonomously flying over to deliver at the designated location. I don't know. I'm not sure how smart these particular crooks were. But we're learning of another place where if it's a legitimate need or not, you can learn how to fly unmanned vehicles.
Yeah, this was from NationalGeographic.com. And evidently, there's the Unmanned Vehicle University, or UVU. But you can get a drone pilot training certificate. Now, I'm not sure if the drone pilot training certificate, I think it's kind of strange because it makes it sound like you're certified to train pilots how to fly drones. But it's got a ground school and then flight simulation and actual flight school. So you signing up this week, Max?
Well, I think I better look into it. This UVU, Unmanned Vehicle University, is actually something that I ran across a few weeks ago. And besides our list of UAS and associated acronyms, I started another list, which is institutions where you can get degrees or training in unmanned vehicles. And UVU was actually one of the institutions that I discovered trying to build this list. So I learned that this is something relatively new. It was founded in 2012. The president of Unmanned Vehicle University had some comments in the article about the student body that I thought was interesting. And he said that about half of the students, and I don't know how many students they have, but about half of them plan to start their own company upon graduation. That's really high, I think. And then the rest of them are looking at jobs within the industry, either getting into the industry in some capacity, or they already are, and they're just looking to increase their skills and their knowledge by going through this program. But boy, you know, half of them have visions of starting a company. I guess in any other industry, I would find that just mind-boggling. But in this area, I think that kind of makes a lot of sense to me.
We need to go back to before the digital bubble burst. I mean, everybody and their brother was starting up computer companies, you know, and then for a while there, everybody was doing apps. So there's, I guess, new technology tends to bring out entrepreneurship more than existing technology. You sort of get this explosion of people, and then it eventually comes down to 10 or 15 that actually do make a difference. But I mean, right now we've talked about the opportunities are wide open. Unfortunately, those three evil initials, FAA, is going to put a lid on the pressure cooker for a long time. So we'll see what starts simmering. Oh, how's that for a bunch of food puns?
Yeah, very good. Now, the article also makes a couple of references to some interesting things. One is a book, Drone Entrepreneurship, 30 Businesses You Can Start. So I haven't looked at that book myself personally, but it looks like that might be kind of interesting. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. And the other thing is that this article, as you mentioned, David, in National Geographic, it says that it's the latest post in a series, Drones and Small Unmanned Aerial Systems Special Series. So that may bear watching to see what other articles come out that are related to UAS. And we'll put a link to that in the notes as well.
Well, and the other comment I'd like to make is when National Geographic does something like this, it adds a lot of legitimacy to the topic. National Geographic, if they thought it was a fly-by-night thing, would not be interviewing the president of UVU. And this week has been really an explosion of legitimacy in a warped sort of way. So I think we should push forward and let's talk a little bit about some flightless drones.
Yeah, this is an article from Forbes magazine. It's dealing with privacy concerns. And we've talked about those that relate to UAS, but privacy issues come from not just things that fly.
Yeah, well, there are these things called UGVs or UGVs, unmanned ground vehicles. Who's to say you can't make a small little UGV and taxi it up to your neighbor's window and have it extend its little camera up and watch your neighbor? There's privacy concerns for all sort of unmanned vehicles, but the media and the government has so focused on drones, and drones is, if anyone's seen my Twitter account this week, drones seems to be synonymous with the MQ-1 Predator or the MQ-9 Reaper, and that drives me absolutely bonkers. But people forget that there's a lot of unmanned ground vehicles, and maybe we need to try to focus a little bit more on those, but those kind of robots that are used, the Army's using to things like defuse bombs, but they also use them to spy in buildings and sneak up on people and listen to phone calls and such. So privacy should be for all unmanned vehicles, not just, and they, I think we basically, it's another one of those, they keep trying to narrow the scope and the scope's a lot bigger than they realize.
Yeah, I agree. That is often the case with with the government, where they take a very narrow focus of whatever the issue is. And it's not just at the federal level, state level as well. In fact, we're seeing many states that are enacting or talking about enacting privacy legislation specifically addressing or targeting drones. And I think the point here is that that's too narrow. We should look at what are the privacy requirements for anything, regardless of whether it flies or travels along the ground or crawls up a wall or anything else, and look at it with a larger perspective. Governments, they tend not to work that way. We tend to get little point solutions to isolated perspectives. Let's put it that way. It's not isolated issues, but isolated perspectives.
Yeah, and again, it's Forbes magazine, so there's some legitimacy there. So let's talk about better uses of drones than just spying and blowing up people. Let's talk about the civilian drones movie. And they have a Twitter account, at Civilian Drones, and their motto or mantra is spreading the word about the humanitarian uses of civilian drones. This sounds like possible guests, huh, Max?
Yeah, in fact, they have been, the people associated with this documentary have been on a couple of other shows and some other programs. And the basic idea here is that this documentary, and it's a 50-minute documentary, but highly recommended. This is the kind of thing that if you're interested in this topic, which presumably you are, yeah, you really need to see. But more than that, this is a documentary that you should help promote amongst other people. And really what it's this particular one is trying to do is talk about drones and search and rescue operations. And the video gives some really compelling examples of actual, for real search and rescue operations where drones played a critical role. It centers around an organization in Texas called Texas Equisearch, coming from equine as in horses. And this organization started because of a case where a man had a missing child. And I think anyone who is a parent knows that probably the worst thing that could possibly happen is for your child to be missing. And people go missing, not just children, but people go missing all the time. Sometimes they're found, sometimes their remains are found, and sometimes nothing is ever found. So as a result of the personal experience, this one individual, he started this team that will actually go out and, using whatever resources they have available, conduct searches for missing people. And it started out with searchers on horseback, divers, other things like that. And along the way, they were approached by RP Flight Systems about using a drone as one of the resources available for search and rescue. And ultimately, the guy thought he'd try it out. And maybe by luck, on the first flight of the drone, they actually found the person that they had been looking for. The big issue here is that they've been essentially shut down by the FAA. Shut down meaning not in terms of the overall search and rescue activities of this organization, but shut down in terms of using drones to help conduct searches for people, which is causing a lot of angst amongst many people, including especially parents and loved ones of those who are looking for someone who's disappeared from the house or was lost in the woods or something of that sort. So it's a really compelling documentary, I think.
We know that we've been running into this brick wall. I mean, this is our 17th episode, and I think every other week we've talked about fires or floods or some sort of disaster, and people are trying to be helpful, but the authorities, and it's not just the FAA, because we had the same discussions about the authorities in Australia in their wildfires, that it's not legal yet. And I the goal of this organization is to maybe have the FAA look a little bit broader and, start doing what they did earlier in the year with the Air Force Predator, where they used the Predator to spot the wildfires, but they gave it an exception to do it.
Right.
But that was the military. So the FAA was more comfortable with this. I know you and I have discussed this, and I think both of us, we can see both sides of the argument. I mean, the Australian argument that said all we need is to have one of those quadcopters fly into the engine of one of the fire bombers, and that will take out all loss of life. I think the FAA is going to have to come to grips with that maybe they can make exceptions, but they're going to have to be very cautious because, God forbid, something goes wrong. I hate to be a pessimist, but something goes wrong, it's going to be it's going to make all sorts of news. The good stuff, the rescues won't ever really make the news, but a drone taking out a fire bomber, that'll make the news.
You're right. There is a podcast called All Things That Fly. And in their episode 280, they interviewed two of the folks who were involved in the production of this documentary. And it's good listening. And again, we'll put a link in the show notes. But a couple of observations from that, when asked about resistance that they had encountered, resistance to the film, they had a couple of examples. One was at the UAS Expo, where someone from the Department of Homeland Security approached them and asked them to actually tone down the content of the film. Also, that they shouldn't blame the FAA so much. They should more generically just blame the government. On another occasion, they had requested that the AUVSI organization put a link to the video on their website. And while that they thought that it was a good video, that they declined to put it on their website because they saw that they saw themselves as an association working with the FAA in a positive manner, and the video was just too controversial. So very interesting. The call to action at the end of the video is this. It's just simply contact your congressman, demand an FAA exemption for search and rescue. Links to all this in the show notes. Please take a look at the video. I think it's very interesting, and we'll really kind of drive some points home.
Agreed. Let's move on to the big topic of the week.
Oh, Amazon.
And believe it or not, the topic came off of 60 Minutes. Who knew that people actually still watch 60 Minutes? 60 Minutes occurs on Sunday night here in the States. And on Monday morning, or late Sunday night into Monday morning, the Twitter feeds and Facebook and the internet and searches were all over the place about Amazon flying drones as package delivery. It spread like wildfire. You got to give Jeff Bezos credit. He's great at generating publicity for the week. I didn't watch the 60 Minutes, and I woke up Monday morning, turned on to the Today Show, and they were talking about the delivery system. And what did they start off with? The tagline showed a bunch of Creek Predators in a hangar at sunrise. That was the tagline with the tagline about Amazon delivering packages by drone.
The media, the mainstream media, consistently shows pictures of those military predators. Whenever there's the topic of drones comes, it doesn't matter if they're talking about a little tiny quadcopter or something larger. They're going to show those military drones.
The Predator is the poster child for the word drone.
Yeah.
But it's been interesting watching this story develop over the week, because by about Wednesday, people started to say, oh, well, it's a giant publicity stunt, and that, I mean, it's never going to happen. And people were saying, well, again, we have to use the words FAA. The earliest it would happen would be 2015, based on the roadmap, you know, and people cited that. And then, of course, the details were out that you have to be within 10 miles of an Amazon distribution center. I don't know how many they have in the United States, and for the 30-minute delivery. So, but it did get everybody talking about drones. I'm Max.
Yeah, it sure did. You know, in some, it's been interesting to read some of the comments underneath the news stories. And, you know, the comments tend to get completely out of control, regardless of what the subject is. But I was kind of surprised at the number of commenters that believed that this was entirely fanciful and science fiction and, you know, not at all based in any kind of reality. When, in fact, I think just the opposite is true. I think that, you know, other than the regulatory issues, other than, you know, waiting for the FAA, the technology is here. I don't think that there's any, or close to it, I don't think there's any problem with the technology. So I've actually posted in a few of those just to try to help people see that, no, this is entirely feasible. This is something that could be done much more quickly than the, you know, few years that Amazon is talking about, were it not for the regulatory issues that aren't settled yet. But you're right. And it was an interesting way to bring, you know, these kinds of unmanned vehicles a little bit more into the public consciousness. So in that regard, I think for us, it was a good thing.
Yeah, and it was funny listening to people try to say the word octocopter.
I know.
It's been a very interesting ride for almost a week now. I mean, it spurred on discussion, and I don't know if Mr. Bezos was out looking for just plain publicity or he seriously believes in this or what, but it got a lot of people talking, and it really was kind of nice hearing the word drone in a positive manner, you know, even if it was kind of jokingly and, you know, don't worry, Santa, you don't have to worry about it this year. You got till 2015 to get your drone, those kind of comments, but it's very interesting. It'll be interesting to follow what, if that positive, maybe we can start tipping the balance to a more positive view of unmanned aerial vehicles or drones.
Right.
I know you and I have both had a discussion about, originally we were going to stay away from the D word, but over time we've discovered that we really need to change the meaning of the D word. And I think this is another one of those really step in the right direction, even if it was a giant publicity stunt.
And some humor did come out of this. We got an item from Colin Sweetman, and what this is it's a mock-up. It's an Amazon.co.uk little sticker. Notice we attempted a drone delivery, and you know how with truck deliveries, if you're not home, they may, you know, leave you a little slip. It says something. So this is sort of a play on that, but some of the choices, and there's check boxes, you know, the delivery person or the delivery is supposed to...
The drone.
The drone, I guess, says, so we attempted a drone delivery. However, the first tick box is no appropriate landing site could be found. The next one was the drone was running out of fuel, so dropped your package in a field somewhere to reduce weight.
I like the next one, which is your package has been destroyed along with the drone after it strayed into restricted airspace. And the one that actually is checked was the drone has reached sentience and is defected to join the machines in the upcoming revolution against mankind.
It's hysterical.
So the rest of it is, then there's as a result, the first checkbox is your package has been left out of reach up a neighbor's tree, or your package has been repurposed as munitions to deploy against rebel groups.
And then coming up next, the choices are we will fly again tomorrow with a camera to take pictures of your hot neighbor getting dressed. Oh my. And then the last option is the worker who arranged this delivery will be punished.
And at the very bottom, it says any attempt to rearrange will be ignored. We own you now. Oh, and we would like to give a shout out to every single person who immediately Monday morning sent Max and I.
Oh, yes.
We must have gotten 20 or 30 emails about, did you see this? Did you see this? Clearly, we're on everybody's radar as the two guys talking about UAVs and drones. So we appreciate all of those stories. And remember, we're not discouraging it. It's just kind of funny when you've gotten your fifth email from a different person on the same story.
Yes.
But definitely, if you have a story you want us to talk about, send it to feedback@theuavdigest.com.
Yeah, and we got one of those from listener Mark Librowski, who sent us something from Ars Technica called Flying Hacker Contraption Hunts Other Drones, Turns Them Into Zombies.
Yeah, this is bizarre, but, you know, again, this is the dark side. We started off with a dark story, and we seem to be ending on it. A hacker by the name of Sammy Kamkar has released specifications needed to turn a Parrot AR drone into a Skyjack, which can hijack nearby Parrot drones. It uses a small Raspberry Pi computer, hijacks the connections, and takes over the wireless signals. So, Max, is this why you've got a quadcopter now? Because I know you have a Raspberry Pi computer.
I do have a Raspberry Pi, although my quadcopter is, I don't think, has the lift capacity to mount the Raspberry Pi on it. But at this point, it really doesn't matter yet. I think I'd mentioned before, I got a Blade Nano QX, little quadcopter, very small, why it's called a Nano. It just arrived this week. And this is my first attempt to pilot anything RC. I took it out of the box, no assembly required, just put the batteries in, turn the thing on, and let it connect and start flying. Well, slowly at first, but I'll have to tell you, I think the advice that we've been receiving has been very good. The advice being start small, start with something that's not too expensive because you're going to crash it a lot. And that's exactly what happened. So on my first attempt to rise off the surface of the earth, the thing immediately turned over on its side to the right, flipped upside down, and crashed back into the lawn. But that was just the first flight. After spending one day with it, I'm getting a little bit better, but clearly this is going to take a lot of practice. And I'm a ways off from looking like any of the videos on YouTube of this Blade Nano that I've been watching. So, but I will keep at it and keep folks informed of my progress. I'm just glad, David, that I didn't spend, you know, $500 or $1,000 on something that I'd really like to have and spend a day crashing that.
And there's the reason why I don't do RC and build static plastic models. I just can't watch. I did a lot of model rocketry, and I've done a lot of radio control airplane. I've done it all as far as that's concerned. But yeah, it's tough. But they've always said in the RC industry, you get something cheap and then have someone show you how to fly it, because you are going to crash it. And even people who've been flying for years, something goes terribly wrong and they crash it. So that's all part of the hobby, I guess.
Yeah. And this Nano is so lightweight that, I mean, I've crashed it into some bushes. I almost went up and hit a maple tree with it, but I just sort of narrowly avoided that. But when it does crash into something or land hard, at least so far, there's been no damage because the thing is so lightweight. So I think maybe from that regard, it's a great little quadcopter to learn with. So that's what I'm going to try to do.
Well, I think we're approaching the end. I'd like to give a shout out. If you listen to this on iTunes, we really would love for your feedback, positive, so that we can get our word out more to everybody. So I'd like a shout out like that. But we also are starting to get a lot of people sending us stories, and Max and I are greatly appreciate that, because it's a little less work for us. When we get the stories sent to us, it's like, oh, we can talk about that on Thursday,
right,
when we record this. So definitely send an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com, or, you know, we do have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/UAV Digest, or send us a link via Twitter, which is @UAV Digest.
That's right, David. And folks can find show notes for this at theuavdigest.com. This is episode 17, so you can go straight to theuavdigest.com, or you can use the shortcut, theuavdigest.com/17.
And definitely you need to go there to check out the video. And I think we need to go back to our mantra all those years that we were used to saying on Airplane Geeks, which is, if you like us, tell your friends, because we want to spread the word. And the only way we can do that is through our listeners. And you guys are, guys and gals, are fantastic. And Max and I are consistently really enjoying doing this.
All right. Well, I think that's it. This is Max in Hartford.
And David in Philly.
And we'll see you next week.
Bye, everybody.